previously on Bibliosinensis.
Yes. So now we're going to talk about, I guess, the reasons why you book collect or where to find books.
I wanted that book. And I was like, this is the perfect place to get it, right? Mm-hmm. This is the perfect place to get it.
My first job straight out of college.
They look it up. Or I should say, and they're like, what? It's not in our inventory.
Was like, working okay, that's fine. For
can we order it?
Mm-hmm. Actually, we're going
to that gets us
theater.
To the second part. It's out of print. Same price. So I'm like,
so
what?
You're telling me like two books have actually mentioned about
so there's the other one that's just published by Research Hunters.
A lot of times people are looking for the one.
I was actually, so since you brought up Zafon, I was thinking about. But, I mean, I say that story right now, and it almost sounds like a dream.
But if you can get both,
it doesn't exist.
Ooh,
like,
the price goes from. Yeah. Like,
it's very rare to find specific genre-related bookstores, which. Moving on to the last two of the list of seven, invest in homeschool curriculum that builds your library. So, I mean, this is definitely off of a homeschooling-centric website, but I would have to definitely agree with this.
I'm not sure what that means, though.
So, back to the point that I was homeschooled for a fraction of my life, one thing that I really got into was literature because of homeschool. And I still have some of those textbooks just because they are an excellent reference and anthology of things. And I can say the same for you. I mean, when we had just started Azure Lorca and you needed to learn a little bit more about actual theater producing, you have a book that you used as a self-taught, but it's in your arsenal till now. It's a reference.
Yeah.
And collecting those books allow you to build a very good curated library. Like, I'm just looking at it right now. We have a section specifically for, I guess, tricks of the trade. So, like, let's see. I have designing brand identity. I have an introduction to art techniques, which has, like, all the different references to types of brush strokes and mediums and like paints or gouache and how to use those techniques. I have nonprofit management 101. and then I have an interesting thing on designers' books of patterns, which is how to make boxes and like those sort of things. So, yeah. I mean, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I guess I actually understand the concept of actually doing a homeschool based education. I'm not sure, does it actually ask for us to follow a curriculum from a homeschool?
I think that's what they meant, but I think I would take it as building your arsenal based on like things you study
at home
or things that are passionate that you're passionate for.
Okay, that one makes more sense to me.
I mean, a great example of that are people who buy self-help books.
True. Although it's ironic because a majority of self-help books don't really help. they're made to entertain you. I understand that when I had to actually scour the internet practically for these books that I had to collect, that people leave reviews. And I love those reviews. Mm-hmm. You know, they're actually what got me into these foxholes and allowed me to understand what might be better. Because somebody will drop, you know, some name, some sort of title, and they will tell me, like, don't buy this book, because this will only teach you this much.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of why I actually have the collect the Producing Theater by Farber. Ordeal about that is that it was from the 1980s. And the thing was, we didn't really change the format of theater producing until, like, I guess, the Great Recession.
Mm-hmm.
And by then, everybody had to change everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a good way to actually get me started in that industry, to kind of understand if I spent my money, if I had to ask for money, if I had to, like, get a loan, should I actually pay it back? And why am I not actually paying these people back? And is that legal? That kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
These are real questions, because there are theater productions that don't pay them back.
I mean, I have a, like I said, I have a section specifically for those types of books, and I still treasure them. And then lastly, they suggest to go thrifting.
This is where my heart broke, because books were my thrift. We would actually go to this one bookstore all the way in Long Beach.
Oh my goodness. If I can find that clip, right, I'll make sure to put it.
Yeah, and like, it was like hardback heaven for like, what, a buck? And you were just, I was just in awe. Like, I found like old Batman comic books, like done by Jack Kirby himself, and I couldn't believe I was even holding it in my hand. And they had more than one copy of like these relics.
So people, if you can imagine, they would literally be a dollar. Right? That's the first thing.
Yeah, it was a warehouse. And then for
two, they actually had shopping carts.
Oh. And your shopping cart would be full by the time you were done.
Yeah, it was incredible. Like, I really miss that place, too.
I remember there was, we had a toss of the coin over which Guy de Maupassant, book we were bringing home. Like, they had, like, volumes from, like, you know, the newest publishing of it, to, like, an 1800s, you know, publishing.
Well, to be fair, those were in the back collector shelf, and they were not a dollar, but they were pretty well priced.
Oh, and, sorry, 1900s, my apologies. Yes. But, nevertheless, it was just, wow.
Yeah. So, one thing I like to do, because I'm a sentimentalist, is I will go out of my way on an outing to go to a used bookstore or a thrift store on vacation. And instead of buying a bunch of, like, magnets and necky things, I buy a book.
Right.
And if I see a book that's on my reading list, or maybe one that strikes me, I'll buy a book. I mean, it links me to things. Like, when we went on San Diego, our little trip into the city, I found a used bookstore, and that's where I bought my Shadows of the Wind copy. Or I discovered the authoress, Rosalind Miles, through Goodwill.
Yeah.
In Palm Springs. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a little tip if you're a book reader. I mean, I've even started planning certain vacations around used bookstores. So,
yeah. I know, like, The Battery actually had, like, a majority of, I guess, my presents for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's where I got my Alice in Underland book. I found a majority of my poetry books over there. And, like, they were, like, I don't know. Sometimes they were falling apart. I'm not sure if that was my fault, because, you know, I'm a little rough with my books, just because that's why I like to actually get hardbacks. I travel with my books.
Yeah. Well, and I collected all of my Series of Unfortunate Events from there.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Well, a majority of them.
Yeah. So, just the beauty of I guess, studying your books from home and on your own actually becomes more fruitful, just for the fact that you actually have sentimental value for these things.
Right. Right. So, that article is done. I mean, it sounds like we agreed with most of it, except for, what was it, the gifting or the trading.
Right.
So, I'm going to link that in our post. On our post.
Yeah.
So, check that out on the blog if you're interested in this article or you want to hear more detail. Lastly, we have an article created by Tara Button, who apparently is a, she's a blogger. She writes on readitforward.com. She is also an authoress. She wrote the book A Life Less Throwaway, The Lost Art of Buying for Life. That actually sounds like a really interesting read. But this article on her blog is called How to Curate the Ultimate Home Library. Making a space that reflects your taste, choosing books that excite, and other tips from an expert minimalist. So I think if anyone would know what kind of books to keep, it would be like a pro minimalist.
Ooh.
Because that is something we mentioned in previous episodes. We've argued over countless times. We still have storage issues with our books. We're working on it, but I mean, books are just such a big part of our life. So let's see what she has to say, and we'll go from there. So the first thing she mentions is you have to definitely evaluate the space and the size of your space and how many books can fit in that space. What do you think?
Heathen. Like, how dare you?
You don't need that negativity in your life?
No! Alright. I've seen people drop, like, you know, carriages of books to the library because they had to move to a smaller apartment. I guess that made some sense to me, you know? But, like, these books that I would find would be rare stuff that you would probably never find anymore. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, no, that's just me. I have a hard time with that. I have a problem, people. Hi, my name is Eugene, and I have a problem.
I mean, he's not lying.
Yeah. You know, just,
Yeah. So, ahead. Again, like I mentioned prior, one way I fix that problem is, if I don't have, like, a stellar star rating on it, and that's one way I use my Goodreads, is I check my ratings, and if it's something I purchased and I didn't kind of, you know, I didn't really like, at least I have a, you know, like a digital track record of when I read it, what the author is, what did I think about it. And if it didn't have that great review, I donate it. But that's how I'm able to keep track of what I read, what I like. If I want to recommend it to someone, if it's a thought in my head, I can always send them the link. That way I'm not gifting them a book, but it also keeps things to a minimum. I also put a lot of books that I know are just going to be like quick reads or I haven't officially decided on my e-reader. And then if I really, really love it, I will go buy a copy.
Okay.
So that's one way I do it.
Well, I know that my books, I give away when I sincerely just don't even remember that I had it in my collection.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you don't remember a certain book in your own collection and, you know, whether you've read it or not, I think it's a good time to actually let it go.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I know that I stick to my list of poets,
mm-hmm.
and I collect a lot of Harvard University, like, publications when it comes down to literature, and that stuff's beautiful, but I don't need it all.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So moving on, she mentions the books, like the actual books. She says, the aim of mindful curation, whatever you're buying, is to end up with a collection that serves you beautifully, perfectly, reflects your tastes, and will be in your life for the long term.
Yes, I would agree to that. I know that there are, like, entrepreneurs that rely heavily on just one book, and sometimes it's like kind of irrelevant to people, but they rely on it just to actually keep their mindset, you know, on track and mm-hmm. even test their integrity for it. So I know for me, I have like a collection of essays and I love them. You know, I love them so much, I actually keep them right by my bed. They're like diaries for me as I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like a pinpoint over where I made my decisions.
Mm, you know? Interesting.
That's How about cool. you, though?
Like I was talking about earlier, I have some of my literature books from when I was in high school because they were my awakening, I guess, of literature. And it's nice to go back to those authors or at least get like little tidbits of the best from those authors.
Yeah.
I have a lot of, when I went to graphic design school, like, technique books. I have this, like, really cool book till this day that I adore, which is called Designing Brand Identity. I brought it up earlier. But each page is literally a analysis as to why the logo was created in such a way, who created it, and what was going on, like, financially in that business as to, like, why they changed their logo, or what was the philosophy or the reason. Maybe they changed CEOs, maybe they changed their mission statement. But it's really cool for me. Very interesting. So those things are sort of like time locks and time frames. And when I need to go back to, like, corporate identity understandings, or if I'm working with a client because I still do consultations, I go back to that book, and it's a wonderful refresher. So then she moves on to what's called culling books, which I think is just like rotating your books. And I feel like she's coming for you in this. I won't read the whole section, but with this end goal in mind, don't hold on to books because you think you should, or because someone gave them to you and you'd feel guilty.
Okay, gift books, I know that I've been guilty of actually, you know, I guess, giving them away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, it's a hard thing to actually give away, because as a sentimentalist, you obviously feel like you're entitled to this book because it's a piece of somebody else. And sometimes, you know, you don't want to keep a picture, or you don't want to, like, sometimes you don't want to record the event by video, and you want it to actually live in the moment. And that gift is actually way more valuable to you,
right,
than seeing their face.
Right.
You know?
Like my Redwall book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but I totally agree. So she has three questions she wants to ask yourself
when you're
going through a book.
Is this like Marie Kondo?
It is like Marie Kondo. Are you ready?
Oh my God.
Will I or anyone else in this house read this again?
Hell no. Well, me, I will, but
people around the house? So that's a question to ask.
Yeah.
Would I highly recommend and lend this book to anyone? And the third one is it a beautiful book that I get pleasure from seeing on the shelf?
Yes. Oh, yes. Like, it is, like, to me, it's like a painting. If you guys ever collected art before, you know it's addicting. You know, mm-hmm. when you actually get that, you know, that canvas on your wall, that frame that actually holds it, like, it's a precious thing to you. And that's what a book collection feels like to me. Now, mind you, I actually have slowed down in buying books, but I have actually built up my palate over reading books, which are two different things. I have to at least, like, calm everybody down, because I'm pretty sure you're going to be disagreeing with me on this, dear audience, that buying books and reading books are two different hobbies. Just because it says books in the hobby does not mean that it is the same thing.
No, I can agree to that. I've seen a lot of that, actually.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, again, the library curation, if you trust that library and their system, you can find that book again. You can.
Yeah, well, going back to this article, I think it's, again, you're curating your personality, so when people walk into your room, you know.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, when you have a library, it should be of books that you won't be able to find again.
It's funny because, like, if we get someone we're getting to know or so on and so forth, and they come to our home office and they see our book collection, you notice that they take a good gander at it. They think they can figure your personality out.
Oh my God.
Based on it, which I think's kind of interesting. I mean, I don't know.
They're half right, they're half wrong. I mean, they're half right because, yes, like, these books kind of built me, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
But they're half wrong because this isn't my entire reading collection.
That's exactly what I was about to get to. Like, a lot of the things you keep are kind of a paper trail of your history.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean it's currently your mindset.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, like, half the time, my reading list might actually be several articles, you know, from business magazines or articles that have found snippets here and there. And it's a pretty good way to kind of, like, I guess, sharpen your sword if you're ready to actually argue with people. And arguing doesn't necessarily mean you have to win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the beauty of actually understanding what the structure of arguing is about, is to challenge whether you are actually thinking straight or not. And if it really does make sense, and does it actually make a difference?
Right.
Because sometimes the difference that could actually make in somebody's, I guess, philosophy or understanding of the world is just by accepting your loss. And sometimes humility actually helps. Sometimes just being around that person makes a difference. And obviously I'm thinking philosophically right here, but it's nothing but the reflection of being a reader.
Okay. I don't know.
Carry on. Carry on.
Okay. Well, there's a sub-article in this article, and she gives us a top 10 list of, I guess, genres and how to find and make the most of your books. So she moves into fiction, and she says, looking at your current collection, look for things that feel transformative.
Transformative.
Mm-hmm. Like, identify the books that were transformative for you.
Okay. So, basically, like, if Christmas Carol actually made a difference in your life, keep it.
Mm-hmm.
But if Shawshank Redemption had, like, a novel and it was just literally for pure entertainment, toss it.
What's interesting is she brings up, find the most knowledgeable person you know about books, which are usually at libraries or independent bookshops, and ask them to find something that will give you a similar experience.
Okay, I will say this because I've tested this. Smaller libraries actually have stronger readers. When you go to the bigger libraries, they're just hired just to make sure that the library is intact. And sometimes they don't have an opinion. And that hurts. Like, usually you have to, like, kind of ask around who's the head librarian. Then he has the actual, you know, answers for you.
Hmm.
Like, he has a real opinion. But at least that's my experience. Obviously, some people's, you know, tastes are different and you may not agree with them. So do your best not to judge them.
Well, the second one is really interesting. It goes into biographies, and that's something I've just recently started collecting a little more of. But I like this because it kind of coincides with our modern social media kind of society. She says, choose biographies that will inspire you to a positive action rather than inspire jealousy or self-criticism.
That's interesting.
I really like that. I can't agree more. I mean, I think that self-comparison is horrible. A recent book that I just finished was Lean In by, I forgot, it's Sandy something. She's worked at Google and Facebook. I believe she was the CFO for Facebook. But, I mean, there were points where I just could not relate to her because she was like this wealthy Jewish high class heiress kind of person, raised in, like, you know, like, I guess the elites, and you could totally tell, and it just, I felt like she was losing me just because of her lifestyle, but then I felt like her advice was very inspiring, and it was very, like, down to earth. So I mean, it's like I was able to bridge the gap. Even though I couldn't relate to her lifestyle, I was able to relate to the way she treated business and the way she treated women in business. So it's a really interesting read. It's not on my top recommendation, but I definitely recommend if anyone is into small business or just looking for inspiration and you are a female, do check that book out.
What got you started on that?
So I wanted to just understand and pick the brain of other female entrepreneurs.
Okay.
So that's why I thought it'd be interesting to hear, like, what was her struggles? What does she expect the world of female entrepreneurs to be like in the future? What are we working towards as a whole? And that's the reason why I picked the book up.
Is that something that you pick up often? Because I know...
No, believe it or not. Okay. I mean, more recently, yes.
Okay.
But no.
All right. I mean, here's the deal. I know that we talked about Julia Child earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't get her career until she was how old?
Yeah, so that's... She's one of my more inspirational... she's my favorite biography. Because she... talks about all her failures. Like, a lot of people don't know this, but she actually went to New York to study theater, and she got her degree in theater, and she actually really, like, lived that hardcore New York lifestyle where she shared a tiny dingy apartment and tried to hash out as much writing as possible. She wanted to be a playwright or an article writer or something in theater and so forth, and she just failed. And her mother was actually diagnosed with severe cancer. So she ended up moving back to Pasadena just to care for her. And she literally just lived a good chunk of her 30s as a caretaker for her mom. It's kind of, you know, it sounds too modern in a way for me, like for the millennial generation.
Yeah.
But she didn't really pick up her life, I mean, until she found this weird passion where she basically got into the army or in the military, and that's when she met her husband, Paul. And her husband, Paul, I believe, was like in the architect or some sort of artsy department for the military and had to travel. So she was kind of like this housewife eventually at Paris. And she didn't know what to do with herself, so she just fell in love with the food and wanted to learn how to cook it. And that's what started that. And imagine, like, it was just kind of this passionate second hobby.
She was, like, what, in her 40s?
She was in her 40s. I mean, it even goes into her woes about crying how she'll never have kids because they got married so late. And how jealous she was, I believe, of her sister or sister-in-law, but like a family member. And that was like something that they struggled with. So it was really interesting.
So, Ozis, I guess what it comes down to at all, like, when you actually read these biographies, they're supposed to be, I guess, less about you.
Yeah, I love biographies because when I was in a low point, I brought this up. I was in a low point in my life at one point, and the only thing that seemed to help was books, because not only did I get to see a person's different life, but I got to see a different way of thinking and a different way of problem solving. And it wasn't until I got to think in that abstract manner or realize that there was more other than me and my little woe pile, yeah, that I really got up. So I look for books that inspire me or allow me to think outside of the box, or not the way I would think, exactly. I guess. And that's why I love biographies.
It's wonderful. Wonderful.
So let's see. What's the next one? Comic books and magazines. What's the difference between hoarding and collecting? And you should put them in folders and label them or organize them. That's what she suggests.
I totally agree on that. I remember, like, a lot of people back in the 90s would have, like, these boxes, like the ones that you actually used to move, and would actually categorize them. Now, the ordeal is, I don't think we have that kind of room to actually collect comic books. Which is, I think, why I don't collect too many comic books. I'd rather actually wait for the whole omnibus.
Mm-hmm.
just actually enjoy that stream of story, especially when I follow storylines. I know my favorite omnibus is of the Captain America, the death of Captain America,
mm-hmm.
the comic books leading up to it. I know for you was actually the Court of Owls.
So lately, I've been digesting my comic books by checking them out digitally in the library. And I love that because I get to see a full high digital version of it in front of me. And I've been reading everything from, like, vintage to modern, like you said, The Court of Owls. I just finally finished, I believe it was Frank Miller's Daredevil. That was a good read.
Yes, always a classic.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't disagree with that. Mm-hmm. I do know that I have, like, two magazine collections that I am, I guess, hoping to actually throw out sometime, because deal is with me, I know magazines are beautiful, but unless the whole magazine is perfect, I can't keep it, okay? I can't take any more watch ads in my pages. I love just collecting, like, a snippet of articles, because you don't know this, but, well, I shouldn't say you don't know this. I didn't know this, but there are articles that people resell to other magazines, and it's hard to follow them. But when you can find them, you know, cut it and save it in your, you know, your booklets or something, because those are a treasure. They're wonderful. Like, they may never even, like, reach a book, and that's the saddest part, because it makes more money as an article. And the rarity of it is just makes it a jewel. But, I don't know, what do you think about that?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, in terms of clipping articles, one thing I love finding is a book review of the book sandwiched in the book, if it's a used book.
Yeah.
And I love finding those sort of little things.
Those are beautiful.
Yeah.
Because at least that way, it's actually precious to you.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that that person actually, you know, did some sort of treasure hunt to get that working for them. I mean, like, I'm pretty sure in my head that they found the article first. And then they had to actually look for that book.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's what I think. I don't know if there's any other method. And I'd be surprised if there were, like, something that was done still today.
I know also with collecting magazines, I actually have two nostalgia magazines that I keep with me. One of them is Craftsman magazine, which I have a guilty addiction to Craftsman, historical Craftsman houses. And not only does it have articles on Craftsman houses and the history behind Craftsman houses, all of the ads in it are about the restoration of Craftsmans, like where to get resources for those things, like replacement doorknobs or redone lanterns, like reproductive lanterns for your front porch. And just the whole thing is total eye candy. The second one I have is actually restoring Volkswagen Beetles, and I got it in the, I believe I even got it on a vacation when I was in high school. I think I was traveling, but just the whole era of getting bugs fixed, and at the time, like, what things you could buy, like, all the ads are about, like, the rims and the cute little things you could add on to them. So, and at that time, they just brought back the new Volkswagen Beetle. So it was kind of cool to see the old mixed with the new and what things you could add and what were the additives for the new ones and so on and so forth. So on the list, the next thing she mentions is coffee table and art books.
Coffee table and art books.
Yeah.
That's practically Tesh Chen all in one title.
Only buy these if you have a deep appreciation for what's inside. Otherwise, it's a monstrous lot of paper and ink.
okay, guys, go to Rodeo Drive. There's actually a Tashen shop there, and that's literally all they sell.
It's interesting, because this is an interesting tip. She says, limit your, or try to split your collection into 12, and assign a month of the year to them.
That's pretty nice.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's kind of what we do with our artwork already, because we have an armory for that. So we do. We should actually
try that. We should curate a table shop or an art book month calendar sort of thing.
For our tables, yeah.
I think that we should definitely try to look into that.
That's pretty nice.
We'll let you guys know how that goes. Maybe that should be something we'll start with now.
I think you should actually post that on
the blog or the Tea Hondier.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll find a place for it. But yeah, I'd love to try that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Maybe it's a monthly thing we put up on Bibliosinensis. Who knows? Yeah. Anyways. Then they go into the category of reference and self-help.
Go on. Elaborate.
You often get what you pay for when it comes down to reference. Two books that have similar titles, but the content can be different. Find as many reviews as possible. I think you brought that up.
I did.
If the book looks super expensive, borrow it from a library and see if it's indispensable.
Yeah, because that is an issue. Because, like, all right, there's more editions to the producing theater books.
Mm.
There are more. They're yearly. They're annually. But if you just buy the 1980s, like, almost maybe between 84 and 86, it says the same exact thing.
So, a fun scholarly tip, because, like I said, my day job is I teach.
Yeah.
If you are looking into, like, how-to or, like, career-driven books.
Yeah.
And there's one that comes highly recommended, go look for the author.
Mm.
Or authors in the book. And 9 times out of 10, they actually have a scholarly article for free on scholar sites that you can download for free. Again, 5 times out of 10 of those articles are the beginning chapters of their section of that book.
Mm.
So that's how I discovered the Nonprofit Management 101, is I actually found the scholarly pages for it and how the book is designed. Because I'm sure everyone out there also won't buy a book if it's just hard for them to follow through with, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That actually brings me to Publishing for Profit by Thomas Wohl. This actually is useful to buy over and over again, because the deal is with this guy is that I bought his 5th edition and he just updates it every edition. I don't know if you're supposed to be doing that with the same title. I could have sworn you could actually make more money making, you know, newer titles. But he updates each edition with the trend that's happening in the publishing industry.
That's really cool.
It is, because a lot of people will fall and they will actually go bankrupt easily in the publishing industry right now. And I guess I could kind of just say, follow this guy for now if you are a self-publisher and maybe wanting to become a publishing company yourself. Because without guys like him and people he might actually recommend, because a lot of these guys, they're in a small circle, you'll get lost and you will be lost to obscurity.
Interesting.
So that's nice. That's interesting that, you know, references and
scholarly pages are the best.
Yeah, I mean, I fell for the Maxwell Gladwell trend of, like, I guess, self-help when it comes down to finances and such.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just gonna say, if you don't know what you're doing and you have, like, no confidence in that area of business,
mm-hmm.
then yeah, go for it. It's great. They will go right ahead and build you up. You know, you may not even have to talk to people for it. But, you know, if for somebody that actually already understands half the business and all you really need to do is actually learn accounting, don't worry about these guys. You know, they're there just to actually help you with your confidence. They're not there to help you with your finance sometimes.
Mm.
Yeah, you gotta research.
Yeah.
Because, like, either you dive into a pit, or you will fly to the heavens with your choices here.
Yeah, agreed.
So.
Absolutely agree. So, next section. She brings up cookbooks.
Cookbooks. We were there.
Yeah. Don't let them languish on your shelves. Type up all the recipe names you want to try for a master list. That's ridiculous. Nope.
No.
That's too much work for
me.
Okay, no. So in my opinion, because I don't collect a lot of cookbooks, but I'd love to collect more cookbooks. That's actually on our list of unique bookstores that I'm going to be putting on the list. But there's actually a cookbook bookstore in Chinatown. I look for books that speak to me in, like, I guess what I want to get out of that culture. So there's a few books that I have. Like, one I have is, it goes over the different regions of France, since we were talking about French cooking. And that's actually what inspired me to, you know, after the Julia Child, I'm like, I'm going to get me a French cookbook. And I got that one specifically, not because it was just aesthetically gorgeous, because it had all the different pictures of all the different provinces and the cities and just the landscaping. But it also had a little bit from every region, and so I was able to try different types of French cooking, and that really helped. What's another one I have? Oh, I have this one that I got at a museum, and it's an old, old republished publication over the different types of tea treats you can have for different types of tea, like high tea, holiday tea, outdoor tea, summer tea. And it's usually like they have a sandwich or like a savory followed by a dessert and then like what tea pairs with it and that sort of thing. And I love it. I mean, I adore that book. It inspires me a lot. It's what taught me how to make shortbread. So the base recipe in there is actually what taught me how to make shortbread.
I do understand, guys, like, when you buy a recipe book, it is like a how-to book.
Mm-hmm.
So don't spend so much time in trying to actually categorize these things, because obviously you could type them down or take photos of them. Just keep the book. Most of the time, you're trying to get to do what the cookbook recipe is trying to get you to do. You are shopping for this food. You are making this food. Like, you don't make, I guess, flashcards for, I guess, mechanic books, do you? Like, that's kind of awkward to me.
Well, to be fair, so there are some books I've gotten rid of over the years because I find myself only using one recipe.
Okay. So, that makes sense.
Like, I had this huge book, and it's pretty famous, actually. It's totally Americana to me. Recipes found on the back of food labels.
Yes!
I still have, I think my mom, like, I tried to give it away, but my mom took it. There was one recipe I go to religiously, and that one is the Philly Spritzers.
Mm.
So, if you guys want that recipe, I will gladly trade it. They make the best Christmas cookie. It's like a cross between a sugar cookie and a cheesecake. And they are just amazing little cookies. But I got that from that cookbook.
Speaking of, I guess, things that you want to kind of collect and actually just enjoy in your bookshelf.
Mm-hmm.
I remember we were looking over for Sears catalogs for houses.
Yes.
Yeah.
During college, I actually stayed in a Sears cottage. It was like a little, not even 500. No. I think it was shy of a 500 square foot house.
Yeah.
Very small house.
And they used to have a catalog
they for used these to, houses. Yeah. And I'm again, back to the craftsman house movement and just the old architecture, but yeah.
I understand. I guess what I was trying to get at was just that in collecting these things, they have monumental purpose historically.
Mm-hmm.
oh, this, I guess what it comes down to the craftsman house is that kind of like how recipes are like? I mean, do they disappear? I gotta ask, because like I realize that everybody has their own version of jambalaya.
Yes, so when I look for recipes, they do disappear, but I think what I've noticed is people kind of rehash the same recipe, but I think one thing I love about a good cookbook, and like the reason why they're worth exploring a few here and there, I mean, for the example of shortbread. I mean, shortbread is pretty much like three ingredients. It's butter, flour, and sugar. But it's how to prepare it and the technique and like the degrees cooked or like the method that makes it worthwhile.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's what I look for. I mean, shout out if anyone knows Chef John from Food Wishes. I mean, I think the reason why he's like so successful, aside from just fresh, delicious food and like rehashing classic recipes, is he is very animate about educating you how to cook and technique. And that's why I think his YouTube channel is so successful. So, hey, Chef John, thank you. By the way, still do that prosciutto wrapped chicken, so thanks. Yeah.
Okay, then I guess, I don't know, I guess I've had this weird misconception that you don't need to actually write down these recipes.
I still keep a catalog. I have a classic old school recipe cookbook card thing. I love them. I feel like if you really love entertaining and you really love cooking for your guest, I mean, it just adds a whole layer to share your favorite recipes or to write notes or versions of the way you prepare it. Like, when I make lemon curd, it's based off of an original recipe from, like, that old tea time book. But the way I make it, I put extra juice in mine, or I put a little bit of extra something, or some techniques ask you to just use egg yolks. I don't. I use the whole dang egg, and I find ways to adjust. So if I know that, I'm not going to always remember that if I keep referring to that, so I'll write the card down.
Okay.
So I have my own arsenal for a cookbook, theoretically. But I think that's the great thing about recipes, is just that everything evolves, or there's a different spin, or there's a different way of doing things.
Okay.
And let's see. Oh, so this is interesting. So one of the last things on the list she brings up is audio and ebooks.
Okay.
She says, keeping a library in the cloud allows you to get information when you want to.
In your cloud or in your
app? In your cloud or app.
Because personally, if I put it in my Google Drive, mm-hmm. then yeah, I do that. I've done that for law books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to reference like some of these books over and over and over again, just to actually write contracts, because that's what I've done for a few people, and they're fantastic. They're great, but if I had it on Hoopla or if I had it in any other app, they disappear in like a few weeks, and that hurts.
So we did that. We transferred a lot of our books that aren't like collectible titles, but we love them, and we've turned them to audiobooks or ebooks.
Yeah, they're all sitting in our e-readers right now.
Yeah, and then she ends up discussing maintenance, and I thought this was a nice way of looking at it, because I think the hardest part of being a collector is learning what to let go of.
Yeah.
Which we've talked about. Yeah. But the way she puts it is, finally enthuse the next generation by introducing them to your library. Lending them favorite books and sharing your knowledge, they'll be the ones keeping your books alive in the future by reading them.
This is very true, because I've worked at a used bookstore, and some of these collections that we would actually buy, the reason why we get it for such good cheap prices is because the person that inherited this library Mm-hmm. Mind you, usually these libraries have, like, expanse amount of authors you could not believe were actually even in shelves still. And they just give it to us almost for free just because they didn't know who these people were. You're just like, wow, really? Like, you inherited a library. Do you understand what is, like, so beautiful about that? You practically have inherited, like, a piece of your relative's soul. And you could actually argue with them after, you know, posthumous here.
One of my favorite heirlooms that I actually own is, like, a yearbook from my grandpa's year, I guess, like, high school years.
Yeah.
I also have a collection of when my grandmother did a lineage, like, track before Ancestry.com and all that stuff was a thing.
Yeah.
People would actually hire archivists to do personal commissions. And it's really cool because there were documents. And the letters of that they sent back and forth are also in that folder. But yeah, it's really cool. I also have their Bible and I have, like, some of their favorite books. I think I have some of their magazines.
Okay.
But I mean, I don't have a lot of things, but yeah, I totally agree with that.
It's lovely.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
But that concludes this. Thank you for those of you that have made it this far to the second part of this episode, or the next episode, which is part two. This was a really engaging topic, and I hope it's inspired you to go out there or to browse and go through what we call, what, the foxholes, and try to find your collection. We'd love to hear about your collection. What do you collect? How do you display? I mean, maybe that's a whole other subject, but how do you go about collecting? Is there something we missed? Maybe something you want to bring up in the discussion eventually? We'd love to hear from you. Again, we've for the past couple of hours have been drinking Everglen. It's absolutely one of my favorite teas just because it just brings a nostalgia. And isn't that in the end what collecting is about? Is just what makes you happy and tells about your personality. You know, with this tea, I was able to bring you a bit of my treehouse growing up in the apricot trees, and I would literally eat my fresh apricots in the middle of summer right off my tree while playing, and I would even feed some to my pups. So that's a lovely moment that I was able to capture and send to you guys. We look forward to hearing from you guys and talking about more books in the future.
Just to let you know, we are available on Instagram and on Facebook. So catch us there, follow us, subscribe, however you'd like.
And of course, where all podcasts are found, you can probably find us. And until next time, cheers.
Cheers.